In Chicago, two comedian skeptics named Andy and Art were mysteriously abducted by the illusionary mastermind and conspiracy theorist known only as Mr. Bunker. The following serves as a record of Bunker's attempt to convince non-believers of the truth about conspiracies and paranormal activity. Andy and Art give an uninterrupted presentation and verdict on the plausibility of these offbeat topics, delivering what they call the whole enchilada. Will Mr. Bunker convince these two skeptics any of this is real? Will it convince you?
Welcome to Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time Podcast. I'm your co-host, Andy Hart, and with me, as always, is your co-host, Art Stone. Welcome, Bunkfuckers. Art's in vogue.
I'm in vogue.
He's in vogue. Art, you're looking good.
Thank you. I just got out of the tanning salon. I am fully nude, fully tanned. I'm wearing those eye goggles over my crotch. Only one of them. I only need one to cover it up.
Yeah.
And I got them over my eyeballs as well.
Yeah.
I think I look great.
Yeah. Art's got one half of those goggles that can hold his entire junk in it, like a little bowl.
Yeah.
It's displayed sort of like a fruit dish
on
his chair right now.
I got to look good through the winter, Andy. I want people to be like, where have you been? And I've been like, Aruba. And they'll be like, really? I'd be like, nope.
Art's going to say...
the tanning salon.
But it's called Aruba. Aruba Tanning. Check it out on North Avenue in Chicago. 2211 West North Avenue. Tell them Art sent you.
Tell them Art sent you, and you'll get a free bronzer.
Free discount. That's Aruba Tanning. 2211 West North Avenue, Chicago, Illinois.
Andy, you're not looking as good.
No, I'm
not looking disgusting.
Yeah, I look really disgusting. And honestly, I'd
say, you know what? You ever see those images online, Andy, that they're kind of like, oof, these are really unsettling images. I shouldn't even be looking at these kinds of images.
Yeah, I think usually those are called cursed images.
Yeah,
art.
You remind me of one of those.
Yeah, and it's probably because of this today's topic.
Really?
I've been really...
I don't think that's it.
I've been really getting into this week's topic, and
I'll be honest,
I don't feel so good, and my brain doesn't work so well. I think that I might be under the curse of an ancient Asian conqueror.
Whoa. Jeez, wow. Wow. That's a heavy fucking thing to drop.
It is a heavy fucking thing to drop, but you know what would make me feel better?
What's that?
Sharing this information with you and all the beef fuckers out there because
the beef fuckers.
Because honestly, I would feel so much better if I just get this out of my chest. So let's do this as a topic today. Let's talk about this curse.
Oh my God.
The curse of Tamerlane.
Tamerlane's curse?
Tamerlane's curse. And you know what's even more cursed?
What's that?
That this came to us from a bunk funker.
Oh my God. Someone's trying to curse us?
Someone's trying to curse us. And honestly, it's the...
I've been cursed out, but cursed?
Clubhouse leader in episode topic suggestions, what? Erica Elizabeth.
Wow. Erica Elizabeth, thank you.
Setting a record. Will anyone ever surpass Erica Elizabeth in quantity of episode topic suggestions?
No. Uh-uh. Won't happen. Fucking try us.
I think second place probably is the princess of this show, Natalie O'Hamilton.
Yeah, Natalie's got a lot.
Got a lot. A lot of topics.
Yeah.
And I don't know after that. It's a lot closer together after those two.
Sure. A lot of bunches.
Mm-hmm.
Erica, though, leader of the pack. Thank you, Erica.
Erica, we really appreciate you sitting in this topic because it's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real historical head scratcher.
It's a history mystery.
It's a history mystery.
Wow.
And Art, I think that you're going to be initially going, there's nothing to this, and you're going to be annoyed by this topic.
And as I frequently do.
And you're going to hate it, and then you're going to have a turnaround, and you're going to go, okay, maybe there's something to this. So if you're like Art and you're ready to shit all over this topic, but then be redeemed in the end, you can look at the notes for this show and you'll see
look
a timestamp in
just
there.
Look at them.
And it's going to tell you where you can zip ahead to if you want to put the fast forward on time and get through history. But if you don't want to do that, great, stick around. Because Art and I first, we got to tell you how we got captured and ended up here in the bunker today.
I'll tell you what, Andy, there's some days where I feel like Mr. Bunker capturing me every week feels like a curse.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit like we're cursed. But
we're having fun.
We're having a good time. And once again,
you know, the thing is, though, when you do get involved with a podcast, Andy, you get involved with it, you get into it, even if it is forced, like it is with ours, you want to see it be successful at the very least, right? Call it Stockholm Syndrome, call it what you want.
You know how bad it would feel if we were doing this podcast, being captured every week, being forced to do this podcast, and only like six people were listening?
Right. And it wasn't the most popular podcast of all time.
Right.
Breaking, shattering every record for podcast ever.
Right. I mean,
that would feel awful.
It would feel awful if we did this for anything less than the most popular podcast of all time.
Can you imagine if we spent upwards of maybe almost close to 10 grand on a thing and then we've never made a single cent off of it? Don't you think we'd feel bad about ourselves?
Yeah. Can you imagine if we had done that? And can you imagine if, you know, we'd been doing this for like multiple years and we sort of have advanced really slowly in terms of how popular it is, but then, you know, it's just kind of stalled at some point.
Luckily, none of that happened, though. I mean,
luckily, this is just a rocket ship to the moon.
It's the biggest podcast of all time. People are talking about it, and that's one of the things you do when you are a big podcast. You can afford to buy billboards with, like, I was almost said life-size. Can you imagine? Life-size.
Yeah.
No, with like 20-foot tall full body scan images of ourselves.
Right. So
advertising the show.
Yeah, we decided to get a couple of billboards, one big billboard here in Chicago.
Billboard advertising, still a huge market. Not just for strip clubs and lawyers.
No. Anybody can use a billboard, and honestly, I think it's underrated as a form of advertising. So we did the only thing that we could, which is get some sort of laser scanning device to perfectly map every contour of our bodies.
The poses we did were so cool. I did a Heisman. I was like, I was like,
I did a Saturday Night Fever.
Right. We did one that was really fun. That was the Coppertone Girl, where you were the dog and I was the Coppertone Girl, and I was wearing a bikini and you were
biting Art's underwear.
You were pulling down my bathing suit with your mouth, revealing my non-tanned ass.
Right. Yeah. That was
part of me. I won't tan.
Yeah. Yeah. Art always lays on his front when he's tanning.
Or
on his back.
On my back. But we did that. That was a really funny one.
Yeah.
We did an Alien vs. Predator one. That one kind of didn't make a lot of sense. People were like, what are the costumes? We're like, no, it's Alien vs. Predator. And they're like, is that like an iconic pose? And I was like, it makes. We didn't end up using that one. That's fine.
Yeah. No, but we had a lot of great ideas. We did red M&M, yellow M&M.
We didn't have costumes or anything. It was just like,
just I wore a yellow shirt and you wore a red shirt.
Yeah.
And just sort of naturally looked that way.
We were like, oh, ketchup and mustard. And we were like, no. Red M&M, yellow M&M.
We said, no. Dipshit. Fucking asshead.
Yeah, to the guy who was putting up the billboard, he was like, oh, these are.
We were there with him when he was putting this thing up. And he's like, oh, I get it. You're doing like a ketchup and mustard thing. And we were like, no, no asshead. You fucking dipshot.
And this guy was a real fucking idiot. I mean, he was like, he smelled, big burly arms because he like climbs these fucking billboards all day and he's like hoisting these things up.
Yeah. He was very strong, but he was very stupid. Real dumbass.
Real dumbass.
Real fucking asshead. Stupid piece of shit. And, you know, stinky motherfucker, greasy as fuck.
Stinky motherfucker.
Jesus Christ. I mean, this guy smelled like shit. He smelled like an ashtray that had been forgotten about for 40 years and never cleaned. Like, this guy fucking reeked, and he was so fucking greasy and gross.
Yeah, he was awful.
He was pretty strong. I'll give him that. Real dumb fucker,
though.
Dumb piece of shit. Real fucking idiot. I mean, just stupid as shit. Like, don't even get red M&M, yellow M&M, ketchup and mustard. It's like, what the fuck are you even talking about, you freaking idiot?
Fucking dummy.
I know we're laying on a hot dog, but what the fuck? Why would that be ketchup and mustard?
We did a college dorm room series where, like, we painted our backs all those different Pink Floyd things and we're bare asses and you can see our bare asses and stuff on a poolside.
Right.
That was a really cool one.
We did a Calvin Klein one where only our underwear waistbands are visible.
We did a Bob Marley one.
Mm-hmm, Bob Marley.
We did an Einstein with his tongue out one. That was really fun.
That was nice. We did a few where, you know, we were just kind of exploring the space a little bit, like, and how we could set up our bodies. So we were like kind of making letters with our bodies. Mm-hmm. Like we did a lowercase H and we did, you know, a lowercase R.
Yeah.
And
big old A.
An O.
Big old O.
Oh, those were good.
Those were great. But, you know, we ended up just going with ones where we were just smiling.
Yeah. In the end, it turned out to be the most effective one.
Yeah.
Because people started saying like, oh, yeah, you might as well just look like yourselves.
Yeah.
Trying to market the podcast.
Right.
So we went with just 20-foot versions of ourselves.
It's kind of us like smiling, but we're like, shoulder to like back to back, but shoulder to shoulder. We're like cheating out,
mm-hmm.
and our arms are folded, and we look really like we look so fu- like we normally look really cool, but like we look really fucking cool.
Yeah, in this photo. I mean, it's hard to underscore. You can't underscore enough how just cool like, we looked in this photo. Just how confident.
Yeah,
like it really showed off our you know high test alpha male personalities.
High test alpha male personality. Yeah, no, it was really cool.
Yeah.
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 For those of you who got to see it.
Yeah. For the,
because,
yeah, unfortunately, it was kind of a short lived billboard because, yeah. I mean, not long after this dumb fucking idiot, this dumb piece of shit,
real dumb motherfucker,
grease guy, greasy guy. Fucking piece of shit idiot, put this billboard up. These fucking billboards of us, they came to life.
Yeah. That was fucked up, huh?
I think there was like some big lightning storm and.
Big old lightning storm.
Big old lightning fucking storm.
Stupid, dumbass lightning storm.
Dumb fuck.
Stinky motherfucker lightning storm. Stupid idiot.
Dumb fucking lightning storm.
Dumb fucking mother nature.
It electrocuted our billboard.
It electrocuted and brought those things to life.
They got brought to life by the power of electricity, just like in the movies.
Just like in the movies.
And just like in Benjamin Franklin's diaries. You guys ever read about that? How he brought that kite to life by shocking himself with electricity?
Yeah. That's what I took away from it.
He turned that key into, that key came alive.
Yeah.
He had to kill the key.
Key to life.
Yeah, he had to kill that key because that key was going around doing evil stuff.
Yeah.
So he after
killed the key.
Yeah, afterwards that key, it fucking killed a horse in Philadelphia and ate it.
The key ate the horse?
The key ate the horse. He had to kill the key. It was eating livestock.
Well, and back then if you killed a horse, that was basically on par with killing a human.
Right. That's like eating a car now.
You wouldn't eat a car, would you?
Just like a Klondike question. What would I do to eat a car?
It's like you wouldn't download a car, would you? Stealing music from Napster.
Oh, yeah, I'd download a car if it was free. Why wouldn't I? The fuck are you talking about, Napster? Dumbass.
dumb, stupid motherfucker.
Greasy fucking media sharing service.
Stupid Sean, whatever your name is.
Does that even still exist, Napster?
I have no idea.
Might as well be Crapster.
Got him.
So anyway, these billboards come to life, right?
Oh, yeah. That
holy
was scary.
Shit. They fucking start smashing up Chicago.
Yeah, they're terrorizing the city.
Oh, my God. And, you know.
As us, like, your billboard was eating a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
My billboard was, like, judging everything and picking it up and being like, ugh, and then throwing it and being like, this isn't up to standard.
Yeah, they really had a lot of our personalities.
Yeah.
Mine was mainly attacking, like, supermarkets and fast food restaurants.
Mine was complaining about how the streets aren't wide enough and people are zipping past traffic too much.
Yeah, it raided a couple of raw denim stores.
Yep, I raided a bunch of raw denim stores, my billboard did.
And, you know, we're sitting at home watching this chaos unfold and we're like, oh, fuck. We're probably going to get blamed for this.
Yeah, this is not a good look for us.
Yeah.
Because it's us, it's our faces.
It looks like we're doing it even though it's a billboard of us.
Right, people might think, oh, Andy and Art somehow got themselves turned into large paper cutouts of themselves, 20 foot tall, terrorizing the city. No, 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 no. We were safe at home.
Right.
Normal human boys. These were other entities separate from us that got brought to life separately.
Yeah.
That's the confusion.
that was a lot of the confusion. I mean, the media was calling for us to be like
publicly executed
and publicly executed. Well, I mean, I guess it's fair to say that the calls from the media for us to be publicly executed were stepped up from usual. There's always some background murmuring that we should be publicly executed.
Right.
To just increase morale.
Right.
Of the citizenry. But
increase morale.
But honestly, they got even more vociferous with their
Got so vociferous. They were so vociferous. I said, how much more vociferous? I turned to you. I turned to you and I said, how much more vociferous can these guys get?
I know. And then out of nowhere, 90s WWF wrestler Bociferous showed up. And he starts choke slamming people.
Oh my God.
It was terrifying.
It was fucked up. It was a fucked up day.
So anyway, we're sitting at home. We're like, oh shit, we're going to get publicly executed.
Here it comes.
Then boom, all of a sudden, a giant cardboard fist lifts the roof off of our shared home.
We were dolls in a doll. In the duplex that we share.
Yeah.
They ripped the roof off of the thing like we're a dollhouse and throws it and then reaches in, grabs us.
Your billboard grabbed you and my billboard grabbed me.
Yeah. And then our billboards held hands with their other free hand and skipped.
Yeah.
Merrily.
All the way to the bunker.
I said, oh my, and I turned to you, I screamed to you, I said, how vociferous can these two fucking things be?
Meanwhile, 90s WWF wrestler Bociferous was he running behind us shouting, stop using my name and likeness.
Well, thank God it was him and not his porn star counterpart, Bociferous.
Yeah, Bociferous was really.
If that guy showed up, that would have been fucked up. Yeah. Because he would have been having sex with things.
Yeah, he would.
Luckily, it was just choke slams. Trust me, it could always be worse.
Yeah, Bociferous might have done some choke slams. But it would have led to other things.
A different kind of choking. Anyway, they took us to the bunker.
Yeah, so it turns out, in case you haven't figured out, the lightning was Mr. Bunker. There was no lightning storm that night that they came alive.
The lightning was Mr. Bunker.
Right. It was all a trick.
Lightning was Mr. Bunker.
It was all a trick organized by Mr. Bunker.
It was an illusion. He's a master of illusions.
He's a master of illusions.
Illusionary
mastermind. You never know where he's going to show up. Yeah, he's illusionary mastermind. So the lightning was Mr. Bunker.
It's fucked up, dude.
And it's pretty fucking fucked up that he did this to us.
It's very not vociferous.
It's not very so unvociferous. And, you know, how insulting to that dumb fucking idiot that puts up the billboards, that greasy piece of shit that puts up these billboards, that he did all that hard work, dumb fucker, and Mr. Bunker's going to come and, like, bring it to life and ruin it? He ruined that whole billboard.
We paid a lot of money for that billboard.
Yeah, and that poor fucking idiot
poor dumb ass motherfucker.
Stupid piece of shit. He put that billboard up, spent all day doing all that work, fucking idiot, and he just all ruined. Dumb piece of shit. Anyway.
That's life.
That's life in the bunker. But hey, it isn't all
that's
have to be
some more.
That's when you buy a big billboard and then it comes to life. That's amore.
That's vociferous. Curse.
Yeah, the curse. We were cursed. Our billboard was cursed from the start. Just like today's topic. Tamerlane's curse. Art, do you like history?
Occasionally.
Okay, cool. Then you're going to love this topic occasionally. Do you like mysteries?
Oh, I love them.
Oh, well, then you're not going to like this topic very much.
Aww.
Because it's a mystery of why you don't like history. But hey, you know what? Beefers, you're probably going to like this. So let's get into it. Jump in and start hearing about Tamerlane's curse. Here on Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time podcast.
I wish it was Tamarind's curse. Huh? That'd be a lot sweeter. Tamarind. It's a fruit or something. I don't know what it is. Sweet. Anyway.
I think it's some sort of seed or something. Comes in a pod. Comes in a pod. Like a legume. Beefuckers, the time has come.
God.
Today's topic requires the very specific services of a certain character that you've all been clamoring for.
Oh my God.
Every day, Art and I get emails, letters, voicemails, DMs, notes passed in class, telegrams, and more, asking us where this beloved character went and when they'll be back. I'm happy to say that we located this mystery guest and brought them back to appear on today's episode. Let's just say we had to look in a few barns. Wink. Barn. Wink. Blimpers, please welcome back your favorite character of all time on NBCTP, the Past Pig. Something doesn't feel right here, Art.
Yeah, something's definitely off.
Is this the same character everyone's been begging for?
The Past Pig?
The Past Pig?
I don't know, dude. I don't fucking read emails. I don't read what the bunk bunkers say.
Oh shit, dude. Maybe this is the wrong pig.
What?
There's like 13 different pigs here in the bunker.
It's like Thunderdome.
I mean, I do account for most of the methane, but the pigs do some too, okay?
They do.
The pigs do some.
There's some.
All right, now let me just go find the right pig, okay? Where's Senator Snorts? No, that's not right. Oops All Oinks?
No. Oh, that's a classic one, though.
Pigus Dickus? No, that's not right either. Where the fuck is the right pig? Oh, right there. Oinkers, please welcome the History Hog!
History Hog!
Ree, ree!
Whoa, look at him go! Oh my god, he's fucking skipping, he's happy, he hasn't been around in a little while.
Yeah, welcome back to the show,
been around a little while. Wow.
That's right, I didn't have the History Hog slaughtered and spit roasted like so many blogs said.
Oh, those fucking blogs.
Bloggers, they can suck my dick. Those pictures were of a completely different hog. It wasn't the History Hog.
Yeah.
I eat a lot of pigs. The point is this. Today's episode is a tale of a curse traveling through the ages to impact the modern world.
Wow.
Today we're talking about Tamerlane's curse.
Whew.
This topic is just absolutely fucking sopping wet with History Hog juices.
Oh my God.
Is drenched in History Hog sweat, blood, and tears.
Succulent.
Succulent. It's juicy. It is delicious. It is moist. And we have none other than our oracle and all-time leader in episode suggestions to thank for this topic, Erica Elizabeth.
Thank you, Erica.
Erica, thank you so much. So, to understand Tamerlane's curse, we first need to answer the question, who the fuck is Tamerlane?
Who is Tamerlane?
Do you know?
No, but it sounds like Anne Berlin, the emo band from the early aughts.
Well, that's right. Tamerlane was an emo band from Central Asia in the 14th century. Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry. Well, we're going to answer the question for you, all right? You're going to come out of this much more informed, okay?
Well, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. We'll give a quiz at the end. So first of all, Tamerlane's real name wasn't Tamerlane. It was Timur. But Timur was lame. And I don't mean uncool like me, but rather that he was shot by two arrows while trying to steal a sheep and lost two fingers and his leg became disabled for the rest of his life.
Well, what are you doing trying to steal sheep, brother?
Well, we'll find out.
Steal a man's sheep is going to shoot you with an arrow.
Of course, some say Timur suffered these injuries while serving as a mercenary. Either way, these injuries earned Timur the moniker Timurlenk or Timur the Lame, which was Latinized to Tamerlane. The name Timur means iron in the Chagatai language, which is a now extinct Turkic language, which was Timur's native tongue.
Oh.
So Timur was born in Transoxiana, an area in Central Asia, roughly around the areas of modern-day Eastern Uzbekistan, Western Tajikistan, parts of Southern Kazakhstan, parts of Turkmenistan, and Southern Kyrgyzstan.
Oh, my God. What a travel destination.
Very, Central Asia.
Yeah, let's just say that. Those Stan countries.
Right, in the many Stans. So Timur was born near the city of Kesh, which is modern Shahrazabs in Uzbekistan, which is not far from Samarkand, which is also in modern-day Uzbekistan, part of what was then considered the Chagatai Khanate, which was the area of the former Mongol Empire inherited by Chagatai Khan, Genghis Khan's second son, following the death of his conquering dad. You keeping up with all this? All right, get ready for some more names. I just want to say, too, close to the beginning here, there are a lot of, like, Asian, Central Asian place names, people names. So I just want to apologize up front for the pronunciation. So I want to apologize to any Persians, any Iranians, any Turks, any Asians, any Indians, any Pakistanis, Uzbekis, people from Georgia, both the state and the country, Russians. I want to apologize to Turkmenistanians, Azerbaijanis.
It's about time we apologize to Turkmenistanians.
Afghans, people who speak Urdu, people who speak Hindi, people who speak Farsi, people who speak Persian, people who speak English. And most of all, I want to apologize to you bunk funkers.
Wow.
For existing. So, Timur was a member of the Burlus tribe, a Mongolian tribe that had been Turkified in a lot of ways. Now, Art, being Turkified is a lot like getting funkified, but it's more Turkish. Does that make sense?
I was going to say, like, it's like, is it like being crunchitized?
Similar.
Yeah.
But more Turkish.
Oh, okay.
Crunchitized, but Turkish.
Oh, all right.
So when he was younger, Timur and a small group of others, they would go around raiding travelers for their goods, like especially livestock.
That's not nice.
So, I mean, this is how he got shot with an arrow, right? Stealing livestock.
He used to steal livestock like you until he got an arrow in the knee.
Right. If somebody would shoot me with an arrow, I would probably stop.
Right.
So he was stealing livestock. Timur eventually got a reputation as a like military commander because he was kind of leading these guys. And so he entered the service of Amir Kazagan, who was effectively
he Frank Abagnale'd it?
What?
He Frank Abagnale'd it?
What?
He was so good at being bad that they were like, let's put him in and do good.
But yeah.
Come be bad to do good.
Yeah, he was, I mean, yeah.
He was so good at leading his band of thieves.
Right.
That they were like, come lead these soldiers.
Well, you got to remember, this is like high density trading area. So they were probably not harassing their own people. They were harassing traveling merchants and stuff like that.
That doesn't make it okay, Andy.
No, but does anybody care? Do you think the Chagatai Khan gives a shit about traveling merchants?
He should.
Well, maybe he doesn't.
Well, I'm going to go have a word with him.
Okay, you go talk to his mother.
Yeah, I am going to go talk to Travelai Khan's mother.
So Timur got...
his new dad. That's going to happen.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You're going to fuck Chagatai Khan's mom.
I am.
Oh, shit. Oh, fuck. So Timur gets this reputation, right, as a military commander and starts serving the Amir Kazagan, who was effectively at that time the ruler of Chagatai. So under the auspices of Amir Kazagan, Timur invaded Khorasan, a region that was neighboring Transoxiana to the southwest.
Okay.
Keep this in mind. So Timur was in command of 1,000 horsemen.
That's a lot of horsemen.
By which I mean guys on horses and not centaurs. Just to clear that
up. Okay, well, that makes it less cool.
So this was Timur's second military expedition that he was leading. And his success in this expedition led to him getting like other gigs as a military commander. So among these were the subjugation of Khwarezm, which was another neighboring area to Transoxiana to the northwest, and the city of Urgench, which is located in modern-day western Uzbekistan. So he's getting a reputation as being like, he can go and do these things for the emir.
He's a hired gun.
Right. He's basically a mercenary at this point.
Yeah.
Like, but he's working for the local government to like put down revolts and stuff.
Hell
so
yeah.
Keep the peace, essentially. After the assassination in 1357 of Amir Kazagan, Timur declared his fealty to the Khan of Kashgar, which is in modern-day far west China. So this is in like the like autonomous region, like at the very far western edges of China.
Okay.
Did you realize that China and Afghanistan share a border?
Dude.
China's huge.
You're talking to the wrong idiot.
Did you realize that? That's huge.
No, I had no clue.
Great big country. So anyway, He pledges his loyalty to the Khan of Kashgar, whose name was Taluk Temur, similar name, who was Khan of the Eastern Chagatai Khanate, and also a descendant of Genghis Khan himself.
Dope.
And so, dude. Taluk Temur had invaded Transoxiana and taken over Samarkand in 1361. So
he took over what?
Samarkand, which was the capital. Yeah.
He took over a whole capital?
He took over the capital of Transoxiana in 1361.
Holy shit. This guy's fucking leveling up.
He's a bit, well, this is not Temur. This is Taluk Temur.
Oh.
So
okay.
Temur is sent to negotiate. He goes to Samarkand to negotiate with Taluk Temur. But instead of negotiating, he joins up with him. They join forces.
Damn.
So he's a turncoat. And about this same time,
I feel about this guy.
Well, hold on. You get lots of time to make a judgment here.
Okay.
So about this same time, Temur's father dies and Temur becomes chief of the Burles tribe. So he's kind of like getting a powerful.
Now he's leveling up.
He's getting some power now.
He probably got like his dad's augmented weapons, a couple of power ups, cool relic, probably a relic.
Yeah, his dad had a rare set of armor and
plus two to strength.
Right.
So, okay.
Yeah, so he's leveling up. Yeah. So Taluk Temur appoints his son, whose name is Ilyas Khoja, as the governor of Transoxiana. And he appoints Temur as his minister to his son. So not long after that, Temur runs off and joins his brother-in-law, Amir Hussein, who is the grandson of Timur's old master, Amir Kazagan.
Okay.
Ilyas Khoja defeated Temur in battle in 1364 and once again besieged Samarkand, an effort that failed the next year due to an epidemic in Ilyas Khoja's ranks. Ilyas Khoja eventually got killed in a revolt in 1368, so they were kind of free of him. And so after he gets beat at Samarkand, he can't capture Samarkand, Temur and his brother-in-law, Amir Hussein, they set out to like reconquer Transoxiana for themselves, which they do finally get good control of it around 1366.
Dude, how embarrassing is it for that Ilyasova guy? What's his name?
Ilyas Khoja.
Ilyas Khoja that like, what was like almost like 800 years ago, you failed in a battle and now two idiots are recounting that, like that's the only thing we remember of
like
you.
He lived a whole life and
he
all
lived
we
a
remember,
whole life and all we remember is your biggest failure and now we're making fun of
you. You lost because your army got sick.
Yeah. 800 years later on a shitty podcast. Isn't that hilarious, dude?
Yeah, time is fucked up, dude.
Fuck that guy.
Humanity sucks. So in about the year 1370, Temur turned against his brother-in-law. Hussein.
Oh my god, Temur. I can't take these fucking twists and turns.
But he did this because Hussein didn't listen to Timur's orders. To pursue and destroy forces led by Ilyas Khoja, not Ilyas Khoja, who was already dead, but a different person.
God.
So Temur besieged Hussein in the city of Balkh, which is in modern-day Afghanistan, where Temur gained admirers in the city from the like merchant class, other tribesmen, the clergy, the Muslim clergy that was there.
Wow.
The wealthy nobles. Wow. And also for like just regular blue collar workers in the city.
Wow.
Because he was very kind to them and he shared his belongings with them.
That's pretty cool.
And they liked him because this was a sharp contrast to his brother-in-law, Hussein, who really made these people feel alienated because he imposed severe taxes on them, took their belongings, hoarded them, and then spent all the money from the taxes building like elaborate buildings in the city.
I mean, it's a high test move, but not going to win you the people.
No, it did not. So eventually, Temur is successful and Hussein surrenders. Hussein eventually gets assassinated, and that allows Temur to be formally proclaimed as the ruler of Transoxiana.
Wow.
In a ceremony at Balkh.
So he really is leveling up.
He's really leveling up now. Now, Art, get ready for the ultimate level up here. In a true power move, Temur married Hussein's wife.
Oh, wow. He's a Chad now.
The guy gets assassinated.
He's evolved.
Timur's like, I'm going to marry his wife.
He went from beta pod to fucking buffer free.
And Hussein's wife was a descendant of Genghis Khan. So that gave...
Well, everyone's a descendant of Genghis Khan.
Well, I know. Technically, we all are. He's like Adam in a way.
Yeah. Genghis Khan fucked and sucked his way across the whole fucking world, dude.
Right. But these people had the receipts at this time. He's only been dead. Only been dead for a little while.
He had a CVS style fucking
receipt. Now we're just guessing, but back then they had the receipts. He wasn't dead that long at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's a Chad move.
So yeah, so he marries Hussein's wife, whose name is Saray Mulk Khanum, and this gives him some authority to take over rulership of the Chagatai tribe. So the reason that he needed this is because Mongol traditions in that sphere, Timur could not have taken the title of Khan or been in charge of the Mongol Empire because he's not descended from Genghis Khan. So what Timur does is he sets up basically a puppet, Chagatai Khan, who is basically the ruler of the Khanate, but you know, really, Timur is the power behind the throne here.
Wow.
So he just basically turns the Chagatai Khans into figureheads, and he's ruling everything.
This is a total 180 for this guy. So now I'm rooting for him.
So since he can't take the title of Khan, and he can't be, you know, the Chagatai Khan himself, he takes the title of Amir, which in Arabic means commander or prince, and in Persian means immortal.
Whoa.
And in Pashto means leader.
Holy shit.
Good name. So Timur was the emir acting in the name of the Chagatai ruler of Transoxiana. So to like strengthen his position, Timur also claimed the title of Gurajan, which is royal son-in-law in the Mongol.
All right, okay, now he's really tacking it on.
Because he married the descendant of Genghis Khan, so he's royal son-in-law now.
Okay, Daenerys.
Yeah, so brother-in-law of dragons. Unlocker of shackles. So Timur had some big dreams though, Art. Like, he's done a lot already.
He's
right?
Not done.
But he's still dreaming. He sees himself as the restorer of the Mongol Empire.
Wow.
So after Genghis Khan died, there was some stability, but it kind of gets destabilized after a couple of generations.
Yeah, I mean, how are you gonna control that big of a fucking
empire? But Timur sees himself as being like the person to restore this empire to its former glory. And
very sane take.
Yeah. And what do you need if you're going to restore an empire? That's right. Beefers. You got to get out there and take it.
Yeah.
It's not just going to come to you.
No.
That's why Timur spent the next 35 years at war. So for the immediate 10 years following his assumption of power, Timur fought against the Khans of what the Timurids called Jaita, or worthless people.
Betas.
And Khwarizm in the eastern Chagatai Khanate, or what was also called Mogulistan, which is a cool name, finally occupying the city of Kashgar, which we already talked about, in 1380. So Timur also gave support to another Khanate person named Toktamish, who was the Mongol Khan of Crimea, also a descendant of Genghis Khan, and someone who had been a refugee at Timur's court. And Timur gave him support against the Russians, who were fighting against the Khan of the Golden Horde, who at the time was a guy by the name of Mamai. So in 1382, Toktamish invaded the Muscovite domain.
Those muskrat people.
And he marched all the way to Moscow and he burned Moscow to the ground.
Moscow,
yeah.
What is modern day Moscow?
Yeah. Moscow's a very old city.
Wow.
So in 1382,
marched all the way there and he just burned it to the ground.
Toktamish marches all the way there and burns it down.
And why is that?
Because the Russians were fighting with the Golden Horde, which was the Mongol remnant that was in control of the area, a lot of the area that's now modern day, like Russia and Ukraine.
So why, if Timur wants to be the great uniter of the new Mongol Empire, why is he helping what is viewed as the remnants of the Mongol Empire?
Well, you're going to have to wait and find out.
Oh, okay.
This is a story, Art.
Just trying to wrap my head around it.
Yeah, okay. You're going to keep rapping, okay?
Okay.
So after this battle, after doing this burning of Moscow, Toktamish becomes the ruler of the Golden Horde. He becomes the Khan of the Golden Horde.
Oh, okay.
So
they're just like, well, that was fucking badass. Here you go.
Yeah, and so after this, he and Timur get in a fight over possession of the areas of Khwarezm, which, remember, is like a neighboring province to Transoxiana and the area of Azerbaijan. Toctamish's forces invade Azerbaijan in 1385, and then they go to Transoxiana in 1388, and they beat Timur's generals in a couple of engagements. So in 1391...
He didn't level up their skill trees enough.
No, he did not. He should have leveled up those generals more.
Putting too much into the blue tree, you got to go into the fucking red and yellow.
Should have gone into the yellow, gotten some magic to use.
Yeah.
Against the Golden Horde. So in 1391, Timur chases Toctamish into the Russian steppes.
Okay.
Where Timur gets a victory, an initial victory, even though Toctamish and some of his army escape. They get away. But they win the battle. Timur wins the battle. So Timur invades Muscovy again, which is the area around Moscow, and goes straight for Moscow. But he stops on his way to Moscow because Toctamish starts renewing hostilities further south from Moscow. So Timur turns off from his path to Moscow and goes south.
Okay.
Now, the Russian Orthodox clergy remembers this. This is like a day that they celebrate.
Wow.
Because they claim Timur actually left because they brought a special icon to Moscow, and all along its journey to Moscow, people prayed. They said the same prayer, and that's what turned him away.
Aww.
So in 1395, Timur defeats Toctamish in the Battle of the Terek River, which is in the Caucasus. Toctamish never gets into power after this and pretty much ends the conflict with Timur for good. Timur also fucked up the Golden Horde by destroying their capital at Sarai, which doesn't exist anymore, even though it did come back after Timur destroyed it, and it stayed around for a little while. But he also destroyed the city of Astrakhan, which is in present-day Russia. Timur stole away all the most skilled craftsmen and tradesmen from the Golden Horde.
Smart.
And sent them back to Samarkand.
Smart.
These actions weakened the Golden Horde, which led to its eventual disintegration. But it stopped being a power after that. So in 1383, so again, this is going back a little before Toctamish invades Azerbaijan and Transoxiana, Timur starts his conquest of Persia, even though he already controlled a lot of Persian Khorasan, which is like the eastern part of Persia. So he captures the city of Herat, the capital of the Kartid dynasty. And when Herat did not surrender, because this is what Timur wants. He wants to go to the city with force and then have it just surrender. But Herat did not surrender. So he razed the city and killed most of the citizens.
See, you're not going to get a lot of resources when you raise. You got to occupy.
Yeah, you want to loot and not loot.
Well, you could do that.
Sack
it. But then, you know.
You can sack it. You're going to take public order penalties. But
yeah,
as we're going to see, Timur is no stranger to public order penalties. So he kills most of the citizens, and Herat is in ruins for a while until Shah Rukh, one of the future leaders of the empire established by Timur, reconstructs it around the year 1415.
Okay.
So it goes like 30 years of just being in rubble.
And these are like, this is basically what is the Dark Ages in Europe, right?
Right.
This is like medieval.
Yeah, get ready, because this will come up again.
Holy shit, I'm predicting the fucking future with this story.
You're predicting the past, in a way. You're predicting the
Call me Brad Meltzer, because I'm
decoding the past.
Decoding the past by predicting the future.
Yeah, where did your hair go? So in 1385, Khorasan revolts. So Timur destroys Isfizar, a city that's not far from Herat. And all of the prisoners they took during this conquest, they cemented them into the walls alive.
Oh!
So by which I mean
they
took their living bodies.
Oh, God!
And built them into brick and mortar walls.
Holy shit!
The living prisoners. So they like build walls and they stick the people in there.
It's like a Junji Ito fucking horror manga. What the fuck?
It's pretty sick.
That is fucked up.
So that's in 1385.
What an awful way to die.
Yeah. Imagine that.
Holy shit. What kind of fucked up sicko has to come up with that?
I don't know.
It's put them in the walls.
We're going to see. Yeah.
Dude, I can hear them screaming. This is hilarious.
How dare they make me destroy their walls? Let's build them back up.
Holy shit.
With their bones.
That's fucking brutal. That's metal as fuck, dude.
It's very metal. So that was 1385. Shit. In 1386, Tamura attacked the kingdom of Sistan, which is where it is today, like roughly the borders of Iran, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. So it's like this area where they all meet. It's like a Four Corners thing there. And you're familiar with...
Yeah, they got a cute little fucking thing down there. It's like Four Corners between these three
Iran,
countries.
Afghanistan, and
it's really cute.
Pakistan,
a lot of families like to travel
time.
There.
Yeah.
Take pictures.
So Timur basically like ravages the Sistan kingdom, and he completely destroys the capital of Zaranj. So he stops. He holds off on this Persian campaign so he can go frigging kick Toctamish's ass. While he's away, though, there are revolts throughout his Persian territory. When he returns, though, he finds that his generals had kept everything together and didn't lose any of his conquests. So when he comes back after beating Toctamish, he's getting back to conquering Persia. So the next targets that he sets his sights on are the southern cities of Isfahan and Shiraz, both of which are in modern-day Iran. So Isfahan surrendered right away in 1387, so Timur treated them sweetly. However, after Isfahan revolted after the conquest because of taxes imposed by Timur, and the way they revolted, they killed the tax collectors, and they also killed some of Timur's soldiers who were in the city. He ordered the destruction of the city's population.
Wow.
So the death toll is estimated between 100 and 200,000 people.
Holy fuck.
And an eyewitness account from the city at that time claimed that there were more than 28 towers built of about 1,500 skulls each. Like they stacked the skulls into these towers.
This is the most metal topic we've ever fucking covered. That's fucked up.
Very fucked up. So now in case you haven't noticed, our beefers, using terror to discourage resistance was a key part of Timur's strategy. He was careful with who he killed, though, letting the artistic or educated people live, which will come up a little bit later again. So I guess if we lived in Persia during this time, we'd be dead for sure.
Yeah.
Possibly,
oh, big time.
Probably the first to be put to the sword, I would guess.
Yeah.
So anyway, after dealing with Isfahan, Timur turns his attention to Persian Kurdistan, which is in the west of where he was. In 1393, Shiraz was captured after surrendering. And shortly after, the area of the Kingdom of Georgia, this is kind of like the same general area where Georgia is now, he devastates the Kingdom of Georgia, like completely just destroys it, so that the Golden Horde couldn't use it to like threaten his holdings in northern Iran.
Wow.
So in that same year, this is an eventful year, 1393, Timur surprises Baghdad in August by marching there in 8 days from Shiraz. So they heard about this conquest in Baghdad, but they're taken totally by surprise. He shows up and conquers the city. So then in 1398, Timur invaded India.
Oh my God, Timur!
Some of which is actually in modern-day Pakistan.
Oh boy.
But anyway.
Yikes.
But he did this on the pretext that the Muslim sultans of Delhi, which I guess today is now technically Old Delhi, he thought they were showing excessive tolerance to the Hindus amongst the population. Excessive tolerance? Those monsters. Oh my God. No wonder he had to attack. How could you stomach excessive tolerance? Hindus? Oh my God. How could you be tolerant of Hindus?
Oh,
too much tolerance. I mean, I get a little bit of tolerance, but let's slow down here, huh?
Because he had to put them into walls and stack their skulls.
So Timur and his forces crossed the Indus River somewhere around the end of September 1398, and they sack the city of Tulamba and kill off its population in the process.
Timur, good Lord, the arc. I don't like this. This is a dark arc for this guy.
Very dark arc. He's a dark arc. So Timur's invasion goes mostly well at first, because a lot of the Indian nobility that's in control of the cities he's passing through, they surrender without fighting him. But he did get some resistance from a city called Batner, which is actually in modern-day India, which was under at the time, it was under the command of the Rajput king, whose name was Dulachand. So Dulachand was thinking about surrendering, but then he got locked out of the city walls by his brother. He initially resisted.
Okay, you sure his name is Dulachand and not Dula Andy? Hey, you guys locked me out. Oh, did you have your key? Oh. No, I don't have the key. I just... Oh, well, I think I saw it over there. Okay, come on, guys.
So Dulachand, initially, he's like, we're going to resist Timur. Like, we're not going to put up with this shit.
He got locked out of the city.
Then his brother locks him out of the city.
That's so funny.
So Timur kills him.
Holy shit.
Then Timur's army killed the entire army at Botnar, looted the city, and burned it to the ground.
Kind of his MO at this point.
So nobody really made out like... They didn't really make out well on that one. So the army of the Delhi Sultan, Mahmud Toluk, met Timur's army at Panipat on December 17th, 1398. So the Sultan comes prepared for battle, right? He's got armored war elephants with poisons on their tusks.
Poisons on the tusks?
Yeah, they poison up the tusks. Armored war elephants with poisoned tusks. Is that not metal too?
That's fucking
metal
dope.
As hell, yeah. So Timur knew that his army was fucking afraid of these elephants, understandably. So get this. Timur orders that his camels get loaded with as much wood and hay as they can carry. When the war elephants start their charge, Timur sets the hay on fire and they prod the camels with iron sticks, which causes them to charge at the elephants. And they're like, the camels are screaming in pain because they're on fire. Timur understood that elephants would get scared. And so they see these camels that are flaming, screaming,
right,
running right at them. And so the elephants panic.
Right.
They turn around, stampede back to the Indian lines. Timur scores an easy win.
Wow.
All it cost him was burning camels alive.
Jesus Christ.
So Timur advances on Delhi.
Good Lord.
And before starting his attack on the city, he executes 100,000 captives they took in the battles leading up to it.
Oh, good God.
Of course, he prevails in his assault on Delhi and sacks it and destroys it. And this destruction, it took more than a century for Delhi to finally like come back to life from this destruction.
Wow.
So even though this was a big victory, like historically for Timur, like this was a like notable conquest, there were many uprisings in the Delhi area after the conquest, which is kind of confusing. I wonder why. Hard to believe that people weren't happy with Timur as their leader now. Why they didn't just accept him and be quiet. But Timur's retaliation
and his absolutely zero tolerance policy.
Like, -8 tolerance policy. Zero is like, you're already over the line.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything, you fucking idiot. I'm going to murder you. So the retaliation against these revolts was, I mean, pretty devastating, as you can imagine. So after 3 days of citizens uprising within Delhi and Timur's forces like putting down the revolts, it was people that were there at the time said the city reeked with the smell of decomposing bodies.
God, Jesus, fuck.
Which the dead bodies, their heads were cut off and they were like being built into these structures. And the bodies were left for food by the birds. For the birds, I should say. So they cut the heads off and they build them into these towers. And then they just leave the bodies to rot in the streets.
I mean, there's no question. This is the most metal topic of all time. This is a metal album just waiting to be written. Yeah. This is brutal on a scale we've never heard of or seen before.
So by April 1399, Timur's back in Samarkand. And with him, he brought the spoils of his conquest in India. And it's been said by some that 90 elephants captured in India were used to carry stones from quarries to erect a mosque at Samarkand. So he put the elephants to work when they got back. 90 elephants. So then later in the year 1399, Timur headed out again to punish the Mamluk Sultan of Egypt and the Ottoman Sultan Bayezid the First, after Bayezid started annexing territories of areas in Anatolia over which Timur claimed sovereignty.
Not very Bayezid.
Yeah, no, it was not very Bayezid. So the basic backstory on this is that these were people that Timur was like pledged to protect, and the Sultan starts annexing them. So he's like, well, fuck you. Here I come. So in 1400, Timur invaded Armenia and Georgia. Of the surviving population, more than 60,000 local people were captured into slavery, and a lot of places were just like completely depopulated. Like, they killed everybody. Men, women, children, everybody. So after getting control over Azerbaijan, Timur went to Syria. He sacked Aleppo. He defeated the Mamluk army there and occupied Damascus in 1401. He killed many people in Damascus, except for artisans, who got sent back to Samarkand. In 1401, Baghdad also got taken again, and 20,000 people were killed. Timur ordered that every soldier should return with at least 2 severed human heads to show him.
Good God.
And when they ran out of men to kill, many of the people in Timur's army killed prisoners captured earlier in the campaign. And when they ran out of prisoners to kill, they started beheading their own wives just so they could show him 2 human heads.
What?
Additionally, they also destroyed all of Baghdad's monuments that were standing at that time.
This guy fucking looks like Keemstar. With that beard.
So Timur spent the winter in Georgia, but then invaded Anatolia and destroyed Bayezid's army near Ankara in July of 1402. Bayezid was captured in battle and then died in Timur's captivity. So in December of 1402, so that was just later that year after that happened, Timur besieged and took the city of Smyrna from the Knights of Rhodes. And the Knights of Rhodes were Knights Hospitallers who had conquered the island of Rhodes, and they lived there. So a mass beheading was carried out in Smyrna by Timur's soldiers.
So, hate heads.
He hates heads. He does not like bodies with heads.
Doesn't like getting heads.
Likes headless bodies, but not heads. So Timur gets the surrenders of the Sultan of Egypt and from John the Seventh, who was at the time the co-emperor of the Byzantine Empire with Manuel II. Timur goes back to Samarkand in 1404, and in December 1404, Timur started to head to China for more conquest, but he got sick and died in February of 1405.
Wow.
His body was embalmed. It was laid in an ebony coffin and sent to Samarkand, where it was buried in the very nicely constructed tomb called Guri Amir. So after his death, Timur didn't do a lot for a while. He didn't accomplish much after he died. Timur's descendants carried on in the form of the Timurid Empire, which waned through the end of the 1400s, or toward the end of the 1400s, I should say. Timur's legacy lived on, though, as one of his descendants invaded India in the 16th century, much like Timur had done, and established the Mughal Empire, which became quite large and powerful. So Timur's legacy is a controversial one, needless to say. On the one hand, he's revered in Central Asia, especially in Uzbekistan, for ushering in what's come to be known as the Timurid Renaissance, a European Renaissance-style revival of culture and science that left a lasting impact in the Muslim world and the wider world in general. A lot of contributions come out of the Timurid Renaissance.
Wow.
That said, Timur also did kill a lot of people and devastated many cities. That made a lot of people hate him in places like India and Persia and Iraq. Interestingly, though, Timur was popular in parts of Europe because he fought with the Ottomans, who were very much hated by the Europeans. But there were also some Europeans who felt like he was a big threat to Europe, not unlike Attila the Hun had been or Genghis Khan had been. But all of those things aren't what I want to talk about. I want to talk about this curse.
Tell me about this curse.
What's up with that? Well, get this, Art. Timur's body was exhumed from his tomb on the 19th of June, 1941, and his remains were examined by the Soviet anthropologists Mikhail Gerasimov, Lev O'Shannon, and an anthropologist named Zizenkova. By this point, Samarkand was part of the USSR. The purpose of this exhumation
was to examine the remains to prove it was actually Timur who was in this tomb. So Gerasimov reconstructed the likeness of Timur from his skull and found some interesting things, like that Timur's facial characteristics displayed a typical East Asian set of features. Mm-hmm. Gerasimov was sort of famous at the time for doing facial reconstruction from a skull, which was a relatively new thing at that point in history. So the anthropological team measured Timur's height at 5 feet 8 inches, which is pretty tall for the time. The examinations confirmed that Timur was lame and had a withered right arm due to the injuries he suffered. His right thigh bone had knotted together with his kneecap, and the configuration of his knee joint suggested that he had kept his leg bent at all times and had a pronounced limp.
Wow.
So it also appears that Timur would have been broad-chested, and his hair and his beard were red.
Wow.
Didn't see that coming, did you?
No.
I'm surprised by that, too.
He's a fire crotch.
He's a fire crotch. Yeah. They actually said that his pubes were bright red. So, I mean, this is all really cool, and I'm definitely getting horny based on this description, but that's more blessed than cursed.
Yeah, it is.
So here's some cursed stuff.
Oh, fuck.
It's been alleged that the team discovered an inscription on Timur's tomb when they got there. And the inscription said, quote, "When I rise from the dead, the world shall tremble."
Whoa.
Good lyric for your metal album.
Yeah.
So it's also been said by some that when Gerasimov actually exhumed the body, they found another inscription inside the casket that read, quote, "Whomsoever opens my tomb shall unleash an invader more terrible than I."
And they went and opened it.
So before opening the tomb, local residents and Muslim clergy tried to stop the excavations, but the expedition continued without heed. Some of the people in Samarkand even told the excavation team that the curse would take 3 days to set in, and that after 3 days, the trouble would start. So maybe so far this is not really all that scary, but consider this. The exhumation happened in 1941, which was during World War II.
Wow.
So only 3 days after Timur's body was taken from its tomb on June 22nd, 1941, Nazi Germany launched Operation Barbarossa, a plan to conquer the Western Soviet Union and replace the population with Germans.
Whoa.
Now, the Nazis were pretty excited about this plan because they loved genocide, but they also thought that they had the right strategy to cause a quick collapse of the Soviet Union. Hitler believed this would happen in less than 3 months. Initially, the Nazis were quite successful. They didn't exactly catch the Soviets completely off guard, but the USSR wasn't ready to respond with its full might. Nazi gains initially were significant, and by September 1941, the Nazis were closing in on Moscow, and Hitler was telling the press the end of the Soviet Union was nigh. But then it started to snow. The weather got bad, and suddenly the German supply lines were hampered, and their equipment was less effective. By December 1941, the Soviets were launching counterattacks against the Nazis, and by January 1942, the Soviets officially repelled the Nazis from Moscow, scoring them a loss in the battle for Moscow and forcing the Nazis to reconsider the USSR's quick defeat. Hitler eventually realized that Germany's oil reserves were shot, so he schemed to take the Soviet-controlled oil fields at Baku in Azerbaijan. The Nazis made territorial gains in the offensive, but were not able to capture the oil fields. In the pursuit, the Nazis attempted to take control of Stalingrad, which is now Volgograd, an important industrial and transportation center on the Volga River.
Right.
By November 1942, the Nazis had the Soviet forces with their backs against the Volga riverbanks, threatening to take the city. In response, the Soviet launched Operation Uranus to attack the German flanks. And no, that's not a joke. That's what it was called. Operation Uranus, an attack in the flanks. The Nazi forces were surrounded, but Hitler refused to abandon the city. The Nazis continued the fight until they were forced to surrender in February of 1943. The first surrender of the war for Hitler's forces.
Wow.
Wow, indeed. What a tale. The Battle of Stalingrad would prove to be an important one. A change in fortunes for the Nazis, who never recovered from that defeat and the overall failure of Operation Barbarossa. And to think, It all turned thanks to Operation Uranus, launched on November 19th, 1942.
Yeah.
Funny enough, guess whose body was reburied in their tomb with full Islamic ritual in November 1942? You guessed it. It was Timur.
Whoa.
Timur's body was reburied, and the tide of the war turned in the favor of the Soviets.
Holy shit.
Soviet leader Joseph Stalin had ordered the return of Timur's remains to his tomb a month prior, so in October of 1942.
Who did he contact to get that done?
Well, they had sent it to Moscow.
Oh, they did.
For analysis. So whoever was like leading this analysis thing,
wow,
he said,
so
get it
that
back.
In depth with history that he was like, no, put that shit back.
He said, get it back to Samarkand. And then they won the Battle of Stalingrad.
Wow.
Bloopers. Is it possible that digging up Timur's dead, deceased corpse brought woe and despair on Soviet forces? And that his spirit was at least partially responsible for the death toll resulting from Operation Barbarossa, estimated at tens of millions of people? I saw an estimate upwards of 50 million people died as a result of Operation Barbarossa.
Holy shit.
Between all of... It was the largest military operation ever in history, and there were huge casualties on both sides. But then you also have to take into consideration that the Nazis were committing genocide.
Yep.
They were starving the local population. They were raping and murdering women everywhere. There was a lot of death and destruction related to Operation Barbarossa. Tens of millions of people died.
Wow.
So... And is it possible that respectfully reburying Timur's body helped the USSR push back the Nazis, leading ultimately to the later capture of Berlin and end of the war? All I know is that when I die, I'm donating my body to science. So when you all come to try and dig up my grave so you can piss and shit on my corpse, all you're going to find is the whole enchilada.
Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time podcast will be right back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Emma.
And I'm Joe.
And we're the professional book nerds. Two Mondays a month, we interview authors and talk about their upcoming books, what drives them, and their go-to order at the cafe.
On Thursdays, we share recommendations and dive into topics readers face, like, how do I actually read the books on my to-be-read list?
You can find the Professional Book Nerds podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to learn more about us? Our website is professionalbooknerds.com, and you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at ProBookNerds.
We hope you'll come and listen, and as always,
happy reading!
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Calafato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
Welcome back, beefers. That was my research into the curse of Tamerlane, the curse of Timur. Art, I saw you make a face when we talked about the end of the Battle of Stalingrad.
Yeah.
I think you got pretty shocked by the timing.
You were right. You know, it's an interesting piece of history, right? That's not an often discussed part of history. You don't really, I think unless you take history in college and you really get into it, you're not really going to ever hear about Timur, even though he's very well known and celebrated in certain areas and then fucking hated in others. This motherfucker killed 5% of the world population, it was estimated.
Yeah, killed a lot of people. And I think that, you know, people like you and me who are Americans, we don't hear a lot about Timur because...
Yeah,
Timur never really threatened Europe that much.
Right.
You know, there were some Europeans who were even like, he's awesome because he fucking hates the Ottomans.
Right.
So they didn't feel threatened by Timur's presence. Whereas, you know, we hear about guys like Attila the Hun and Genghis Khan because Europeans felt really threatened by them, but
it almost makes them look even more impressive for how much more they conquered.
Yeah.
And how much more they controlled.
It's pretty incredible, honestly. And the thing with Timur is that in like Central Asia, he's very revered in some parts.
Right.
And
you got statues of him and shit.
You know, it's sort of like
three wives.
Yeah. He's like one of these Muslim conquerors who's sort of like retaking a lot of the losses, like reuniting a lot of the areas that in the initial push of Islam, the, you know, conquering of Islam in the area, mm-hmm. like that hadn't been together since then or since, you know, Genghis Khan did it.
Right.
So it's sort of blending these two things together, which is interesting. And he becomes sort of a model for some of the later conquerors in Central Asia, people who...
That's someone we should be emulating.
We should be emulating him. You know, later, like, Persian rulers trying to unite the region, they used some of his same tactics and his, like...
Well, he was a very well-regarded military commander. I mean, it was, you know... Yeah, that thing with the camels is one of the most fucked up and brutal things I've ever heard.
But it's a tactic.
It's fucking smart.
It's a tactic.
And that was, too, the thing about the Punic Wars with the Romans was, like, those fucking elephants. The Carthaginians, I think it's, like, they were, like, inept. They had, like, no fucking clue how to, like, use all these different forces. Because they had mostly a mercenary military. And then you have these fucking war elephants, and they'd be, like, way in the back.
Yeah.
And so then it would be, like, the war elephants would, like, trample their own troops to get to the front, and then they'd get scared.
Yeah.
And run backwards, and the Carthaginians were like, ah, fuck, why are we fucking losing?
Yeah.
So they bring in a Spartan mercenary to like fucking be like, no, you dummies, you put the elephants in the front.
Yeah. Well, like that's the thing is, in India,
right,
Timur could have like gotten fucked up.
Yeah.
When the Sultan brings all of these war elephants and they're loaded like up with armor, they're covered in poison, which is so fucking crazy to me. Like,
and they're covered in poison. Who's getting stabbed by a fucking elephant tusk isn't dying, but it's like, oh no, poison. Like it's overkill.
Yeah.
You're already being trampled to death and stabbed by an elephant tusk.
Oh wow, that tusk went perfectly through me and missed all my organs. Oh no, poison. No, fuck.
Like, who's the one sucker who's getting poked by the tusk, didn't like get just grazed by it, but then is getting a poison wound?
He's like, ooh, it cut my arm a little. Oh shit, my arm's falling off.
Oh, fuck. Dude, that part of the world is so fucking fascinating because it's like, it's such like the cradle of civilization and it's like, it's so neat and you just don't know anything about it. Like, I don't know anything about any of the stands, you know, all those mm-hmm. stand countries, but there's such a strange, interesting amalgamation of history and people and culture. Like, I don't know anything about Kyrgyzstan. I know nothing about it. Turkmenistan, what are they called?
You don't even know their names.
I don't even know the fucking names.
You mean Kyrgyzstan?
Kyrgyzstan.
And Turkmenistan?
Turkmenistan.
Or Tajikistan?
Or Tajikistan or Azerbaijan or any of these fucking...
Uzbekistan.
Or Uzbekistan.
Georgia.
It's like...
Armenia.
They're so interesting, these areas. And like what was, you know, Persia and Iran. And it sucks that the modern situation is so... Well, I don't know about any of the stands, but... like Iran, you know, you can't really go there.
It's tough. As an American, it's tough.
Yes. As an American, as any other country, you could kind of...
Same thing with Afghanistan.
Yeah. There's so much beautiful, like, fuck, what's that area in Jordan? Is it in Jordan? But it's like those... It's one of the wonders of the world.
Petrus?
Yes. It's like, wouldn't you love to go fucking see that?
Is that the name?
It's the city that's in the stone, right?
Yeah,
it's like built into the fucking
name, right?
Walls. Like, you would just love to go, like, look at that shit because it's crazy. It's unfathomable how fucking old and like just gnarly it is.
All right, I'm looking it up. Petra.
Yeah, Petra.
Yeah, the city that's built in the side of the mountain.
What do you think about the history of that place and those places? Are they fascinate you?
Very interesting. Well, and you know, you have a lot of stuff like this where it's like, especially at this time, there's a lot of turmoil and changing hands and a lot of conquering and reconquering. Like, there's not a stable leader over the area.
Right.
And, you know, the people are all like sort of jumbled up, you know, and it's interesting that the Ottomans kind of like then come in and take over after a little while. Like, this doesn't completely set them back all that much. They eventually like are a big superpower. So it's, I don't know, it's a very interesting region. Like, there's a lot of competing different peoples and cultures that sort of all live together and mix together, but then are still distinct.
Yeah.
It's very fascinating. And then you have the, of course, the like interplay of religion
right.
in the area, which is very interesting because, you know, like a lot of the Indian subcontinent, like Hinduism is big, but the Mughals were very powerful from the north and they're Islamic. And then you have things like Christianity, like in the Byzantine Empire and in Russia. And I read also, this wasn't really germane, but like Timur had like kind of a problem with Ismailis, which is a sect of Shia Islam, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. He was Sunni?
No, I think he was Shia.
Oh.
I don't remember. But he had a problem with Ismailis, so there was like an incident where he attacked some village.
Well, Wikipedia and completely says he was Sunni.
He was Sunni? Okay, he was Sunni. Are Ismailis Shia? I can look it up. But anyway, he attacked this village because there was just a bunch of Ismaili people that lived there, and he just killed everybody. And it's like, you know, the historical records, it's like, we're not clear. Yeah, Ismaili is a subsect of Shia Islam. But it wasn't clear why he attacked this village. And it seems like it was just to kill all the Ismailis that lived there.
Jesus fucking Christ.
And then he's like kind of responsible for snuffing out this branch of Christianity that existed in the area.
Wow.
So, because he was an Islamic ruler.
Yeah.
So,
dude, those ancient religions forgotten to time are so, like, that's so fucking fascinating.
Yeah, there's some.
Because we only got like the main ones that survived over time, but it's like, what did Christianity look like as it formed into what it is today?
It's interesting.
We've only seen remnants of it.
Because you can look at like Roman Catholicism,
right?
Eastern Orthodoxy,
right?
And even like Russian Orthodoxy, like all of this stuff is not exactly the same.
No.
And then you get into like all the Protestant branches.
Oh my God.
So this, I don't know, this branch of Christianity that got snuffed out, it was like, you know, fairly old and like set in, but then, you know, it survived.
Or Zoroastrianism too. It's like, what the, where the fuck did that come from? You know?
Yeah. And then, you know, then there's even like more modern religions like Baha'i.
Yeah.
That's like relatively new.
Yeah.
But it's also coming out of Iran. So much religion coming out of Iran.
They love it there.
Very sacred place.
It is. I mean, it's in Iraq too. And apparently Iraq is, I don't know how true this is, but, you know, they are trying to do more of like, hey, tourism, come to Iran, or come to Iraq.
I mean, it would be awesome to visit Iraq.
Wouldn't you think it would? I mean, it doesn't 100% feel the safest.
No, I'm not saying I'm going, but
yeah.
I'm just saying,
oh, you're like, not?
Think about, I mean, as much as everybody wants me to and to never come back. And to be like captured by ISIS and beheaded. Like, just think about all of the archaeological fascinating sites that are, you could tour in Iraq.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to me that after all this turmoil and stuff, some of these places are still standing, like, mm-hmm. you know, probably not in the greatest condition, but,
I'm going to Damascus, dude.
Yeah.
Like, how sick would it be to go to Damascus?
Yeah. It would be awesome.
But you can't, because it's just, there's too much turmoil and shit.
Yeah.
Fucking sucks.
And, you know, some of these places, Americans aren't exactly welcome.
Yeah, we're not exactly welcome.
With good reason.
Especially you.
I'm not complaining. I understand why I'm not welcome places.
You're banned from Europe and most of these places
Europe,
as well.
Asia, Australia, Africa.
Not Antarctica.
South America. North America. Don't tell them I'm here.
Don't tell them I'm here as I broadcast my voice across the internet.
We're doing it with a VPN. So fucking fascinating and cool. I mean, there's just so much history and culture there. You know, there's just like, I mean, stuff like this, it's just wild, but...
It's definitely an area I wish I knew more about.
Yeah.
Because I think
Caucasus, is that what they're called? Is that what this region is called?
Not all of it. I mean, it's mostly just Central Asia.
Central Asia.
But, like, that's... I mean, you can just call it... It's like there are Persia, there's, like, Anatolia, that's, like, where Turkey is now. There's the Balkans. I feel like as Americans, you get like you get a lot of history on Western Europe.
Sure.
Like that's, I don't know. I think that's like where a lot of Americans have their lineage from.
Right. I mean, it just makes sense.
And so we learn a lot about Western Europe.
But it's like you even think about geographically, like if you ask somebody like, hey, where's Turkey on the map? They'd probably be like,
I'd be like, sorry, I was eating a sandwich.
But like. You know, only nerds and geography buffs are going to be able to point out where Azerbaijan's at, you know?
Yeah, I'll
or
be honest.
Or that even Azerbaijan is a place.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. If you put a map with no labels on it, like,
yeah.
I think I could do okay.
You could probably get Russia. I mean, you have a pretty good high percentage that you could get Russia. And once you get Russia, you could get, like, Estonia, and you could get
Ukraine,
you know, Romania. A lot of those.
There are some gimmies for me. Canada.
Yeah, okay.
USA.
Sure.
Mexico. Russia. Brazil, Chile, Argentina, Portugal, Spain, France, UK,
Australia.
Ireland, Norway, Sweden, Finland, Russia, Japan, China,
said Russia
Mongolia,
twice.
Russia,
three times,
Australia, New Zealand, Russia, Iran, Iraq, Turkey, Italy,
Greece,
North Macedonia.
Do you know like
those are gimmies? I feel
you know
like
former
I,
Yugoslavia Egypt, and all the order of those countries. Andy is shaking his head no, like a little kid who got caught in a lie.
Like I know generally what's in there.
Yeah,
but like would I put them in the right order? Like I could probably like if you asked me which one is Kosovo, I think I could figure it out.
Hmm.
If you ask me which one is Montenegro, maybe. I bet I would get it right.
Serbia,
Vatican
Croatia.
City I could get easily.
No African countries.
Yeah, I said Egypt.
Oh, you did?
I said South Africa,
mm-hmm.
Djibouti.
Angola.
Madagascar. Let's see. What else would be easy to put in the right order?
South Africa.
I said South Africa.
Oh,
Russia. I would say...
Or even like Singapore. Like, that's a hard one to pick out on a map. Like, where is Singapore, you know? And it's like, I know that has no reference to this
you get a lot
topic.
Of islands, yeah. I guess I could do Vietnam.
Yeah, Cambodia.
Laos, Cambodia.
India.
Pakistan. Bangladesh.
Sri Lanka.
China.
Madagascar.
Mongolia.
Russia.
Okay,
Nordic countries. You could get a lot, dude.
Okay, I guess I could do pretty well. But I think those are
Norway,
like,
Denmark.
I think those are easy.
Sweden, Greenland.
And I think that I could do okay on the rest. Like, I'll admit.
Dude, once you start carving it out, you're going to be like, okay.
Like, I don't study the map that
Finland.
Much. Yeah.
But you could do better than you think, dude. It's like, but you know what's hard, though? Is like.
Coming up on a.
Germany.
For our patrons, Art and I are going to do this. We're going to print out
a
map of the world. We're going to do the Sporkle where you just name all the countries and we're going to give you our scores.
We literally just named countries for like 2 minutes straight.
This is the greatest podcast ever. This is such a low value podcast. This is just, and all we're saying, the only reason we're naming them is to say what we think are gimmies on putting their names.
Not even doing it. Just like
just
what we think.
What we think we could do easily.
And we're not even getting it right.
No.
We're just like
so we're not,
naming countries.
We're just naming countries that we think we could put on a map. Like, if we had a blank map, we could fill in the names. It's demonstrating no skill other than we can name countries. You have no idea. I could be the stupidest fucking idiot about geography, and you would have no idea. I could do a horrible job. I could just be naming countries that I know.
Oh, my God.
Chad, Cameroon.
We fucking suck.
Mozambique.
Turks and Caicos.
Aruba. Jamaica. Ooh, I want to take it. Cuba. Russia.
So-
Florida.
You know, I mean, God, it's just wild, dude. Like, how brutal this time period was and everything. And somebody, I forget who, but like, I forget what I was listening to, but it's like, dude, you ever think about like human history? And like, basically, I mean, even still today, but basically until like
maybe the 1990s, every single generation was raised with some form of severe fucking trauma. They just didn't recognize it back then. Like, in this period of time, it would be like, oh, well, I grew up in the so-and-so's burnt down my village and killed all the people I knew and did all these horrible things to me. So now I'm going to grow up and, like, take back the reign of power and then go fucking just murder. Like, I don't care about human.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, people are still brutal to this day and horrible. I mean, yeah. Everything. But it's like, you think about, like, raising children. It's like, at least now we're kind of like, oh. I mean, dude, it wasn't even like 40 years ago when it was like totally fully acceptable to just smack the living shit out of your kid. Like, yeah. And at least now we're kind of like, well, you probably shouldn't do that. Like, isn't that wild?
Yeah.
Like, it's just a full-on open-hand slap. Totally fine. Just like fucking 40 years ago. That's nothing. Yeah. Full open-hand slap across the face, and people would be like, good. You're raising them right.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like if you went out to, if you were like in the 1950s, and you went out to a restaurant with your parents.
Right.
And you did something, and your dad, like, smacked you in the back of the head.
Right.
Nobody would go, excuse me, sir.
People wouldn't be like, oh.
Nobody else would.
Yikes.
Nobody else would be like, oh, God. People would be like, oh, that kid is bad.
And I'm not even saying that, like,
ooh, that kid fucked up. Stupid kid. Ooh, bad kid. Good thing the dad hit him.
I'm not even saying that that isn't, like, that still happening happen. Today.
Yeah,
it's just
it
like, at least now today, we're kind of like, hey, maybe don't.
Please don't.
But throughout the entirety of human history, kind of makes sense why things were so awful for so long and still are. You know, it's like, it just, it's generation after generation of, like, the horrors. Like, just like, this is a horrible thing. Like, this fucking guy just, like, burnt down your whole city and piling bodies up into a spire and then letting the birds feast on the carcasses. Can you imagine?
But do you think that we should really hold to more responsible for this as atrocities? Or should we say he was doing his part for the future by trying to help limit global warming by reducing the world population? Doesn't he deserve a little bit of credit for trying to save us?
He was a fucking,
he was a visionary.
He was a soothsayer. He was a clairvoyant. He could see into the future.
There's too many people.
Guys, don't get me wrong. I need to burn these camels alive and kill 5% of the world population. You'll thank me later.
Yeah. You may not realize it yet, but he reduced the world population. He contributed by gathering all of these.
I'm a good guy.
All of these artists and artisans into Samarkand. He really like did refresh a little bit Muslim culture and learning. One of his grandsons was a famous astronomer. You know.
Yeah, but we're not studying him.
That's right. If only he'd killed 2 million people.
Fucking lame-o.
If only his astronomy.
Hey, go study the stars, nerd.
Hey, I get
you. Your cool fucking badass grandpa.
I got you Operation Uranus right here.
Wow. So they took out the body, and then the curse is that he came back in the form of Hitler.
Well, not exactly. It's just the thought is that, and this is where you can, you know, obviously skeptics are going to say, like, Operation Barbarossa, they didn't decide to do that in 3 days.
Right.
It's not like Timur's body came
out. And there
out.
Are stories of Hitler ignoring, like, advice from his generals or whatever, right? Where they're like, hey, we shouldn't go this deep into Russia. It's going to get winter soon, right?
They started too late.
Yeah.
It starts in June. They were too late. They should have started earlier. Honestly, if they had started earlier, if they had started a month earlier, 2 months earlier, they probably could have taken Moscow. And then who knows?
Wow.
So, but they had this plan in place. It was like for multiple years they had been working on this plan. Like, this was like 2 years in the making.
Right.
And obviously Operation Barbarossa was one of
the... where did they get beat at? They were stalled on the Western Front, right? Or they were just good? They were paused?
Yeah, they kind of... Well, I mean...
Well, he wanted a front on like three different ends.
Right.
Which is a little fucking crazy.
Right.
You know, figure.
They're like going south into Africa,
mm-hmm.
Like with Mussolini.
Mm-hmm.
he's going west and north into Europe. They've yet to conquer the UK, obviously. Britain was still, it's still safe. So then, yeah, they just decide, like, let's push into, like, they had kind of developed this, like, border with the Soviet Union.
And Spain just kind of, like, was like, no, whatever.
Yeah, Spain was embroiled in civil war during that time.
Oh.
So, like, they didn't have to do anything because they were already, like, fascists trying to take over.
Right.
So they, yeah, I mean, if you ask me if they would have taken over Britain, like, conquered Britain and then done this, probably would have been a different story. But they had to commit a lot of resources to the Eastern Front because they set up a front
line. It's
huge.
It's a huge area. They didn't, you don't think about how fucking big it is, but it's
huge.
Massive.
It's like 2,900 miles or something.
Jesus Christ.
And they moved on that entire front.
Holy fuck.
So it's not like they went here, 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 and they like are moving forces along it. They had stuff all along the front, and they push all together.
How much fucking stuff do you have? It's crazy. Can you fathom it?
It was like 3 million soldiers, I
think.
That's
fucking crazy.
The Germans committed to this.
That's and so many people.
And it's like 660,000 pieces of armor or something, if I'm remembering right. And so they had to step up the production.
But no elephants.
No elephants. I mean,
that's the scene.
They didn't make any tanks. They didn't put any tank armor on elephants and dip their tusks in poison, which was the, I mean, what the fuck?
Tusks are just asking to be replaced with machine guns. Fucking badass war elephants with machine guns for tusks.
I would prefer it if it was like Gatling guns.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that would look so freaking badass.
Dude, do you ever think, like, what do you think is the statute of limitations on World War II and World War I when, like, future people will look back on that in the same way we're looking back on...
Oh, yeah.
Timur. Like, you look back on this Timur guy, and yeah, when you read about this stuff, it's like, you're like, just like, but you can't even fathom the horror, right? Of like this dude just raising cities to the ground. And like, but like that, I mean, World War II was on a similar level of atrocity.
I think we're cresting it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because the people who lived through World War I are mostly dead.
Right.
And the people who lived through World War II are close.
I think, too, we have a lot more footage from these eras. So
there's a lot more primary sources. And it's
It's
retained in a way that,
like, if you had pictures of these war elephants with poisons on their tusks and, like,
yeah,
fucking
body
spires and, like,
oh, that would be gross.
Fucking dead bodies that he buried into walls, like, you'd be like, holy fucking tits. This is insanity.
But, you know, I think the thing is, like, you know, that's like, you know, we have...
Like, we have photos of Auschwitz.
Yeah.
We have photos of the prisoners.
I was just going to say, like...
The Holocaust. We have photos of the death and the toll and the war effort and video and the relics and the things, and they exist. So maybe it won't. Maybe you can't have that. Maybe
yeah,
it's
like,
impossible.
Like, when you think about it now, like, you know, we live in Chicago. There's a Holocaust museum.
Yeah.
There's places to... remember the atrocities that were committed during the Holocaust.
Right.
And
war museums.
There's things that still exist that commemorate the absolute utter destruction that Germany wrought on other people.
Yeah.
And the horrors, like you said, were photographed. So it's harder to forget them. But I do think that, like, at some point, people like you and me are talking about this as far removed from that trauma as we could be.
Yeah.
Like, I can't fathom what it would have been like to be a
D-Day soldier,
Soviet peasant,
oh,
as the German front advances. You know what I mean?
Because the Soviets were still like,
imagine being just like a regular Jewish person,
right,
living in the Soviet Union, a Russian Jew,
right,
and the Nazis come to town,
right,
and you have no resistance. The Red Army's not here; they just take it over,
yeah,
and then you just get killed,
right.
Like, just slaughtered your entire family.
Right.
Before your eyes.
Yeah, it's kind of...
Like, I can't imagine that.
Right.
I can imagine it, but I can't, like... I can't experience that trauma.
Mm-hmm.
I hope.
Please.
I don't want to, but... You know what I'm saying? Like I'm removed from it because I don't speak from a point.
We're removed from it. So I don't know. It's an interesting thought. Bunk Funkers, let us know if that high concept kind of thought makes any fucking sense. Like, but what, we don't know what the future holds. Like, what if something happens in the future and the earth resets and society forgets and we lose all of that primary sources, like you say, and it just becomes a story.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, dude. Maybe that's a fucking different, maybe that's too wild of a fucking use case where I'm like, shit, it's going to turn into a fucking Mad Max world and like people are going to be like, in the olden times when there was gas that flowed like water, give us the gas, Max.
I feel like we have so much information at our disposal now.
Yeah.
And it's totally possible that all that information could come to nothing because we could kill ourselves. But then it's like, does it really matter? You know, it only really matters if, you know, some people survive and most people are dead and those people don't have access to like all of the huge amounts of information that's available on the internet.
Right. The only reason we know anything about tomorrow is because of the internet.
It is kind of interesting to think about though, right? Because like,
what
if there's like a nuclear holocaust and 95% of the world's population gets destroyed.
And then like idiots like me and you survive.
Right.
Humanity's fucked.
Like, who, you know.
Radioactive war elephants are taking over.
As they should. They deserve
As
it.
As they should.
They've done a lot for us. It's their turn. Let's see what they can do. But I don't know. I just don't think that, you know, it's like, it would be really bizarre circumstances, I think, that we would ever get to a point now where it's like World War II, because of just how much media there is about it.
Yeah,
that people talk about this as being some like ancient past. Plus, you know, for what it's worth, Timur didn't really like cause global conflict.
Right.
There were lots of people who lived their entire lives, lived and died during Timur's lifespan, never even heard his name.
Right.
Never even had to hear his name, didn't even care. Whereas it's like World War II literally like affected just about every person on Earth in some way.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, even more than World War One.
Yeah.
World War One was still a lot of like a European war.
That's a very European thing.
But World War Two was really, really global.
Yeah. Like you don't learn much about World War One in a U.S. history class. It gets skipped over pretty quick because we only were marginally involved.
Yeah.
We got involved late. You know, we helped fund it.
Sure.
We got involved pretty late. We didn't really commit troops till late.
Yeah.
So, and it was not on our shores.
Yeah.
Even a little bit.
Yeah.
So, but obviously, you know, you get to the fucking World War II, which is the meat and potatoes of any U.S. history class. That and the Civil War. Those are kind of like you do American Revolution, Civil War, then you go World War II. Bam, bam, bam.
Oh, geez. Everybody forgets about the War of 1812.
Not a very cool war.
The War of Canadian Aggression. The Crown Strikes Back.
The Crown Strike. American Revolution 2. The Crown Strikes Back.
How you feeling about this curse, though, Art? You think curses are a thing?
Yeah, you know me, Andy. I'm a big curse guy.
Yeah, you're very superstitious.
I'm superstitious. Writings on my wall.
Yeah, you got to stop doing that.
I like it.
We've talked about this.
Out of paper, and then I got to write on the wall.
At least use a washable crayon. How long do you think a curse, like how long could a curse stay dormant?
That's a long time for a curse to stay dormant. This makes for an amazing fucking movie, which stay away from it, Netflix, because you make shit fucking movies.
What would be awesome?
Find somebody fun to make a movie like this.
Is if they did this thing, but instead of like the real story, it's like, oh, everything's going great, or there's like this war going on, and things are like kind of in a stalemate.
Yeah.
And they decide to exhume the body of this long dead conqueror.
Right.
And they exhume the body, and the body like comes to life, and the corpse leads this army of other, of the undead.
Undead corpses of Timur. That's a fucking fun movie.
Undead, like an Indiana armored Jones, elephants.
Indiana Jones style movie.
with undead elephants.
Yeah.
Timur's Curse.
Yeah.
Boom.
That's what I'm thinking.
That's a fun movie.
Fun movie.
It's like a Jumanji meets Indiana Jones meets something else.
But what's the statute of limitations on a curse, Art?
I don't know what the statute of limitations
is. He died in the early 1400s.
And really long time ago.
500 years later, they're opening up his tomb.
Why didn't nobody ever open his tomb between that and then?
I guess unlike with Egypt, people were respectful of his remains.
That's wild. You would think that somebody at some point in time would be like, oh, let's
dig his dig up his body.
I guess not. I don't know. That's probably important. Who made the call to dig up his tomb?
Well, plus two, I think there's, you know, this is like a sacred site in a way for the local, like, Islamic population.
That's true.
So it has more of a, you know, it's like when you talk about the pharaohs, like, nobody's really religiously connected to that religion
right
anymore when people start raiding it. And,
right.
You know, I don't know. Maybe there was just a little bit more respect on it because of that. It was more of a holy thing, like, oh, you don't want to disturb the body.
But who made the call to go dig him up again? Who did that?
I think it was Stalin. It's like a government thing there. You know, they have this program to...
So he had control over these areas.
Yeah, this was part of the USSR.
Right. But what... So what led him to dig up Timur then?
I think this is just a part of a... As far as I can understand it, it's just like part of, you know... It's sort of like you said, like Indiana Jones thing, where they're just like digging, like looking through their antiquities, and like they have people who are working to like gain knowledge about the areas that are part of the Soviet Union now. And so
we took over all this shit by force. We might as well start digging up the graves and see what's up.
Do we think he's actually in there? Let's find out. Like, I don't know what the impetus for like why that time, why the timing of it, but. They were okay with it. They said, yeah, sure. Send this expedition. Go excavate the tomb.
I don't know, man. I think that, yeah, maybe the statute of limitations on a curse like this is a little overdone.
You think this was too old?
Maybe it's too old. Kind of forgotten the history.
Yeah.
Do you think this guy belongs in more history topics? You think he should be up there with the other cons, or is he just not making the con... Conmore. Is he not making your Mount Conmore?
Mount Conmore. I think that...
He just kind of like brutalized a lot of people.
Yeah. His contributions are mostly, in my mind, like almost secondary. In that it seems like he valued and respected like people who were doing creative work or in like intelligent work.
He would have liked our podcast.
Right. He would have been a listener regularly because he's very creative and very intelligent.
He'd have been like, you guys, I'm not going to slaughter you and behead you. Keep doing your podcast.
Yeah. As long as you keep it up, but don't make a bad podcast. But, I don't know. He like, and that's responsible for bringing a lot of different people together and getting this sort of cultural output that they got from the area. But, I mean, to me, it's like it's not like he set out to do that. That's like a byproduct of just some of the things he was doing. It's not like he was like, I'm going to.
Yeah, I mean, he could have been like a traveling noble who like just was like, oh, let's all learn together. But no, he's like raiding and conquering and killing. Yeah,
he's brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then so, at the same time, it was like, ooh, like.
So, I mean,
stuff for me.
Like, I don't have any opinion on whether or not he should be a hero for, like, people in Uzbekistan. Like, I don't know what it means to Uzbekistanis for Timur. But for me, I'm sort of like, he's an interesting character. Like, I think interesting characters deserve our attention. But, like, does he deserve to be revered or, like, studied particularly? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I think if you're, like, looking at the history of the area... Because he has such an impact on other people in the area,
yeah,
it helps to like level set and get the idea about why anybody cared about him in the like, you know, few hundred years after he died. Mm. But from like the big scope of history, like he's probably not that consequential in the big scheme of things. You know what I'm saying? But then who is really? Because you're looking at like people that sort of remake the world in a way, or like have this butterfly effect that ripples out and changes the world.
from Conquerors. Like, Genghis Khan is that way because it was such a big impact.
Yeah, it was huge.
And
it changed. DNA is in everybody.
Right. It changed a lot of things. So that's got a very big butterfly effect. Timur, not as much.
I didn't see that part with that Ashton Kutcher movie. It was lost on me.
The butterfly effect? Or Dude, Where's My Car?
No, Dude, Where's My Car?
Oh, where my car? Dude, where my car? I got all my onions in it.
We get to verdicts here on the
channel. Yeah, let's get to verdicts in it. You ready to verticize on this?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay.
Fuck you.
Fuck me. I'll go first. I'm going to say Curse of Timur. I'm going case closed. I don't fucking believe any of this bullshit.
Wow.
About a curse. You know, it was even said by some of the anthropologists that those inscriptions weren't actually on the tomb. But I don't know that that matters.
Wow.
If people say it's cursed, like, it could still be cursed. I don't know. I just don't believe in curses. I'm not a superstitious person.
No, you're not.
To me, Operation Barbarossa was in the works for a long time.
Right.
And I think that Hitler was a fucking stupid idiot,
mm-hmm.
And couldn't get out of his own way. He's a big dumbass.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, ultimately his stupid decision making and like lack of available resources are what doomed the whole thing. Because if the Nazis had pushed all the way to Moscow and had actually destabilized the USSR, like within that same year that they launched the attack, who knows what we could be talking about today, right?
Right.
Because that could have been very impactful. That could have been very successful.
Yeah, that could have just
There's no guarantee.
That could just been like match point.
Right. They could have just...
the Allied forces would have to come to terms and surrender.
Yeah.
But also, there's a lot of history in between that and where we are today.
Well, and you have to think about it too. This Nazi plan was pretty long-tailed.
Right.
Because the idea was like, let's exterminate the locals,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll replace them with Germans. It's going to take a while to happen.
Yeah.
And then you've got things like...
Germans don't grow on trees, they grow on the ground.
Right. They're potatoes.
They're
And, like, you have things like in Poland, there was really fierce resistance. The Nazis didn't plan for that.
Yeah, I mean, you can
They
always,
thought they would sweep through Poland and Poland would fall like nothing.
Right.
Well, the Poles continued to be a thorn in their side
mm-hmm.
the whole time the operation was going on and even right. until, you know, they were liberated finally. So, it's like, I don't think that the Nazis would have been able to necessarily control all of this huge area that they were grasping for.
Yeah, like, I think, you know, shows like Man in the High Castle explore the idea of what happens if Germany won the war and what that becomes. Like, obviously, there's none of these great empires throughout, like, what I mean by great is expansive, not good. Expansive empires throughout history, right? Like, the Roman Empire couldn't sustain itself. Ancient Greece couldn't sustain itself. Fucking Attila couldn't sustain himself. The Mongols couldn't sustain, you know what I'm saying? Like, nobody can sustain that much fucking landmass trying to eradicate history of people for that long, right? Like, eventually, that happens. I mean, look at the USSR. It eventually fell.
Yeah.
And then all those other countries that sprang up from that who had their own independence. And then lots of, it just happens constantly. It's just how geopolitics change over time, right?
Yeah.
Countries gain and lose independence and they, you know, change hands and they, things happen. So,
but it's sort of like if the Germans had gone through with it and like had actually eliminated the population
yeah.
in every place that didn't embrace fascism and
right.
the Nazi, well, I mean, I guess at some point they have to like stick to their ideals. They would have had to just exterminate a lot of people.
Right.
And it's the same thing is true with the Japanese, right? The Japanese were similarly brutal.
You're very brutal.
Well, I mean, not quite as brutal. Like, I don't know. The Japanese don't seem to me quite as committed to genocide. They like genocide a lot.
You might want to ask South Korea.
Well, and China. But, I mean, I don't know. I guess this is a shitty scale to work off of.
It's a very shitty scale.
Anyway. like, I don't know, between the Japanese and between the Germans that they could have, like, held control of all of Asia. Because you got to think about it. That's a huge amount of territory. It's a huge amount of people.
Yeah, you're going to be dealing with uprisings and revolts and revolutions throughout. It's kind of like what we're seeing even today with maybe not on the same scale or the same geopolitical opinions, but like you got Russia and Ukraine. Even today, right?
It's Ukraine.
And you have other allied forces. War has changed too.
Yeah.
What would it look like in the future if a superpower or the Axis of Evil or whatever did win and then stayed in place, but then warfare has changed so much over the course of time? Would they be able to keep up with that? Would they have kept those resources? With different, like, how do different things play out? What would American history look like? Would America switch sides and go work out treaties with those? You know, you wouldn't have had the Cold War, or maybe you would have. You know, does America still build the fucking, you know, atomic bomb? Like, who gets that first? Probably not.
Yeah.
It changes the whole fucking course of the world. And it's,
yeah, one little event.
It's probably something better left to fun history books like the What If essays. But shout out that book I've never read. But sitting at my kitchen table, I have yet to read it.
He keeps asking me to read it.
You seem like you'd like it. You were thumbing through it. It seems like it might be a book.
I probably would like it.
You can borrow it if you want, but don't get your fucking stinky little fingers all over it.
Well, I'm going to be eating Cheetos while I read it. I mean, what else am I supposed to do?
I need to give my verdict.
Yeah, you still didn't even give your verdict yet. I think you're going to go case confirmed.
Plausible molecule.
Oh, plausible molecule.
I think that this curse, I am a curse guy. I'm a superstitious guy. Curses scare me. Superstitions scare me, and I follow them. But this one, statute of limitations are way too big.
Way too big.
Two, it's one event. Yeah. If there was multiple events where people keep opening up to Moore's tomb and shit, bad shit keeps happening, then I'd say, oh my God, keep this fucking thing closed. But it's just one event. And like you say, it was something that had been planned. There is lots of other factors contributing to why that operation failed or gained traction. Lots of factors to that. And I just don't, you know, I don't. Yeah, leave the tomb closed. We don't need to play around. Let's not, you know, poke the monkey, so to speak.
Is that the saying? Poke the monkey?
Let's not shock the monkey, so to speak. Let's not spank the monkey, so to speak. You know what I'm saying?
Let's not poison the elephant tusk, so to speak.
Let's not poison the elephant tusk or light the camel on fire, so to speak.
Let's not light the camel on fire.
God, a fucking flaming, screaming camel. That is literally the Red Demon.
Yeah.
Shout out Jimmy Gribben and
the Red
Ghost
of Arizona.
Red Ghost of Arizona. A literal flaming, mangy, diseased camel.
Yeah.
Walking through the U.S., the desert in the U.S. But,
yeah.
Anyway. All right.
That's it.
Those are the verdicts.
Art's plausible molecule. Where are you, Bunk Funkers? Where are you on the scale with the curse of Temur? Let us know. You can catch us on Instagram and Twitter at Mr. Bunker Pod.
We need a hashtag.
Huh? Oh, we didn't do a hashtag. Yeah, yeah. Oh, shit. Oh, fuck. Oh, God. You let us know what you think. We use the hashtag.
It's got to be something about elephants.
Yeah, armored elephant poison.
Yeah, poisoned elephant tusks.
Poisoned elephant tusks. Yeah. Use the hashtag poisoned elephant tusks.
Where did my fucking thing go?
I don't know, Art. It's behind your computer. Oh, your
it's
pen.
Over there. What the, how did it get over there?
Oh, my God. Timur.
The curse is real.
Timur, move the pad.
My legal pad, and he moved it from my desk in the bunker to
oh,
the,
God,
the
we disturbed
couch.
Him by talking about him.
Was it hashtag poisoned elephant tusks?
Hashtag poisoned elephant tusks. Let us know what you think, beefers. Get at us at Twitter and Instagram at Mr. Bunker Pod. You can email us, MrBunkerPod@gmail.com. You can find us on YouTube. Go to YouTube, search for Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time Podcast. You can find us in the internet. Just look. Google it.
Google it.
You can get on the subreddit. We're not involved in it, but go there and have fun. Chat with other beefers. And if you have the means to do so and you feel so inclined, please consider becoming a patron of this show by going to...
Please.
please. We're desperate for money.
Please.
Please consider becoming a patron of this show by going to patreon.com/MrBunkerPod. For the low, low price of $5 a month, you can get access to the Bunker Discord. You can get your very own bunker alarm, and you can get dozens and dozens of hours of behind-the-scenes exclusive Patreon-only content available to you. You get the whole back catalog.
The whole back catalog!
When you sign up, you don't have to worry about just getting new stuff. You'll also get exclusive sneak peeks to things that are coming up. You get access to Twitch streams, where Art's going to be gaming.
Not Twitch, but...
streaming.
It's a...
Game streaming.
Yeah, it's YouTube.
Sorry.
And it's an unlisted link that you can only get if you're on the Patreon.
So consider it. Check it out. Patreon.com/MrBunkerPod. Art, do you have any last words for the beefers today?
Yeah. Beefers, if you out there are considering putting poison on your elephant tusks, let me just tell you, it's overkill. It's not necessary. It's not something you need to do. If you have a large elephant, a large armored war elephant, put it at the front lines. You want those monstrous units in the front to break their ranks, reduce their morale and their leadership. Trust me. Can you imagine being an ancient whatever, whoever makes up his army, right? The makeup of his army.
Yeah.
And you've never, and then you just see a fucking elephant for the first time. You'd be like, what the? You'd be like, holy fuck. What in the fuck is that thing? You'd be like, holy shit. The armies of Delhi are like, riding fucking war elephants with, you'd be like, what the? You'd be like, what the fuck are we doing? You'd be like looking around, you'd be like, what are we doing? What is it? This is fucked up. Wouldn't you?
I'd be like, no thanks.
Yeah, I'd be like, fuck this.
I'd be like, I'm fucking out of here. How am I supposed to hit this goddamn thing with an arrow?
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
You gotta have some balls to take on a fucking armored war elephant.
You do have to take on, you have to have some balls to take on an armored war elephant. Yes,
that's what
sure.
I want to say.
That's,
in closing,
the bottom line, Art's bottom line.
Put that on my tomb.
You got to have some balls to take on an armored war elephant. Art Stone, 2022.
Whoa.
Beavers, that's our show for today. So for not the titular Mr. Bunker, but for my concerning co-host, Art Stone, I'm Andy Hart saying that was the whole enchilada. Excuse me.
A news story gets shared by a friend on social media, or you catch a tweet that really makes your blood boil. But how do you separate fact from fiction? That's the premise behind Disinformation, a 10-part series from Evergreen Podcasts and Emergent Risk International coming this fall. Tune in to Disinformation wherever you get your podcasts, and remember, don't believe everything you read.